Now, Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning and welcome to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson. Nice to see you as ever, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing well. Nice to see you too.
Yeah, busy program today. It's eviction day at Tent City by the Provincial Courthouse, as you're well aware. Question that's looming is, if people don't move, and by the sounds of my 10 a.m. interview, lots of them aren't going to go, how quickly can the province seek an injunction? Like, how does that work? Explain that for us.
Sure. I mean, they could have done that already. And in fact, there would even be a basis to have people removed without seeking an injunction.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like people who have somebody set up a tent on your front lawn of your house. You would be able to remove the person from your front lawn without going to seek an injunction from the court.
This is everybody's land. I mean, this is the province's land.
That's true. But if the province saw fit to have them removed, they could do that without a court order, in my view. But they've decided to take, I think, a sensible and measured approach to it. It would be surprising to me if sort of today they were making efforts to remove them. So far, they seem to have given them notice and alternative places to go. I expect what will happen is if, as seems likely, not everyone decides to take up the offers for other places to go and live, at some point the province will go in and seek an injunction from the court to order that they be removed.
How long does that process take?
Well, theoretically, you could do it very quickly, right? It
would like be today, for example.
Yeah, you could, if you wanted to, set down a chamber's application very quickly, if not that day, within a very short period of time. While you could, in fact, do that quickly, it probably wouldn't make a lot of sense from a political point of view or just from a human point of view. I think the approach being taken is a reasonable one in terms of giving people adequate notice to consider their options and where they want to go, giving people time to move their belongings into one of the other locations that's been provided.
But Michael, what if they've got, you know, busloads of people? I mean, we'll have to see if that materializes, but are said to be heading over for a rally this afternoon and kind of want to make it ground zero for homelessness.
Sure.
Could the province do, I mean, in terms of how quickly could they get an injunction from a court and move in there to get people out? You say they could do it without the injunction, but if the injunction process happens, how long does that potentially take?
You could, in theory, get that done pretty quickly.
Today?
I don't know if you'd get it on the list today, but you'd be able to do it if you wish to very quickly. That, in my judgment, wouldn't be a particularly sensible approach to it. If people want to protest and come over on buses and hold up signs and talk about homelessness, I think that's all fair game. And it wouldn't make much sense to try to do something to prevent that from happening. That's
legitimate. But what if it amps the attention of this site up and it just becomes a bigger focal point, not just provincially but nationally?
I think that's okay, right? People are entitled to protest if they want to come with signs and protest homelessness. I think that's just fine. My judgment, if you were asking my advice in terms of how they should respond to it, would be just give it a bit of time. If people want to come and protest and talk about those important issues, I think that should be permitted to go on. It wouldn't make sense to try and stop people from protesting it or expressing their views. That's all legitimate. Give people a bit of time to do that and give people time to consider their options and move to other places. And ultimately, if some people decide that they're not going to move in good time, I expect they'll go and get the order. And you would hope people would respect that and move as they're required to. And finally, if they don't do it, then and only then would you want to physically remove them.
And there are groups that want to fight an injunction, should one be issued.
And that's fine too, right? I mean, we're fortunate to have a legal process where people are permitted to do that. It would be, you might be able to rush this sort of thing onto a court list. It would make more sense to give people time. So if they want to have counsel or lawyers are wanting to do that pro bono, they can come and make a submission to the judge. And, you know, we have an orderly process for it. The flip side of all of that is that you would hope at the end of the day, if the injunction is issued, you would hope people would respect that as well. And if required to move, they do so.
What's an injunction is, I mean, the eviction notice is there. Why would an injunction, I mean, this is just the two of us
Well, you mean one is the request to move is sort of like the person who set up a tent on your front yard. The homeowners decided that rather than going and trying to wrestle them off the, drag the tent off of their front porch, they've instead given them a letter saying, would you please move along in a couple of weeks? In most cases, you would expect somebody to do that, but if they don't, the next step would be go to court, and an injunction is if you obtained one, which you would expect to, it would be an order that the person vacate your front lawn.
Or the cops come in and do it for you.
Eventually they would. You might start with getting the injunction, let the person know. Ordinarily you would expect a person to comply with a court order, and if they don't, then there could be a condition that the police enforce it.
Let's bring Roger in. Good morning, Roger. You're on CFAX.
Good morning, Victoria. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I wonder if it could be considered a conflict of interest, knowing that these judges, it's their place of employment and that they've been personally affected and may have personal feelings on it. And speaking of personal feelings, I'm sure that many share the same opinion as I, that a lot of these people receive so much money and so many services. You know, for example, that place, the Boys and Girls Club, the allocation per person is over $3,000 per month. Working, hard-working people don't get that kind of money. It's unfair that these people are getting so much money and services, and it's the politicians that live in this polyanthus world where they can just hand money out everywhere because that's the world they live in. And the working class don't get half of what they get for working 8 hours, 40 hours a week.
A couple things going on there, Roger. Thank you. Michael.
Sure. In terms of the judges, I don't know how much actual impact it would have. I'm frequently up at the courthouse, and it doesn't seem to have been interfering with the operations in the courthouse. You frankly wouldn't know that it's there when you're there doing your business. I suppose there would be an issue if it was, it would be a serious problem if they were preventing people from getting into the front door or something, but this is off to the side. In terms of the support provided, there's going to be a thing to remember is there will be a range of people there. There will be everything from somebody who's there simply because they want to protest an issue, or there was one fellow in the news the other week who was saying he wanted to live a rural lifestyle in an urban environment just by choice. And, you know, those people probably should seek other options. But there are people, and many of the people that would be there would have legitimate mental health difficulties. They would legitimately have serious addiction problems. There are going to be a few urban campers and a few people that are, you know, there for the protest. Most of the people who are living outside in the rain on a muddy lot aren't going to be doing that if there was some sensible alternative for them. It probably is expensive to provide sort of the necessary drug treatment and support and so on for people who are vulnerable and need that. We should do that as a society, right? Those people are our neighbors and children and friends, and we should take reasonable steps to make sure people get the help they need. So I think the approach being taken is a measured, sensible one. I don't think we should be trying to stop people from protesting. They're certainly welcome to do that. If you want to come to the lawn with a sign or banner or protest to express your desire for more social housing or help for people with mental health difficulties, I think that's all good. And we should just give people a reasonable period of time to do that. And once that's complete, we can sort out how to move things along.
So no billy clubs and roundup today.
That would be, I think, as the minister talked about, ham-handed. So you would hope that wouldn't be the approach.
You're listening to Legally Speaking here on CFAX 1070 with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. Stay with us.
Call us 250-386-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. When it rains, it pours. Or will it? We get it right with an accurate, up-to-the-minute forecast. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
You may never have done a bench press in your life, but you have the power to give life. It's as simple as donating blood, and when you do, we'll say thank you with a special red bandage. It's a badge of honor because you answered the call to arms, literally. Donate blood and you give life. Book your appointment now at blood.ca. Canadian Blood Services. It's in you to give.
Traveling soon? Donate blood before you go and bring your travel buddies. Book at blood.ca.
Imagine the best of TV for everyone, everywhere. Now, dream of one place where it all comes together. It's here. Crave TV, featuring the best from Showtime, including Ray Donovan, The Affair, Homeland, and the new hit series, Billions. Stream on. Crave TV is now available to everybody. All you need to get it is the internet. Sign up to start your one-month trial.
Coastal Community is the island's largest 100% local financial institution. We love local, but sometimes you need to leave the island to get why you love it. Drop by the open house at our renovated 762 Fort Street location from February 29th to March 4th. Meet the team, enjoy refreshments, and learn about our full range of financial and insurance services. And enter our $5,000 Island Escape Travel Contest. If you win, don't forget to send us a postcard. Coastal Community Credit Union. Together, let's do great things.
A superior SUV and an amazing deal are waiting for you at Campus Acura in Victoria. Right now, discover the best-in-class resale value and world-class technology of the 2016 Acura RDX and get $2,500 in cash back during the Winter Driven event. There are only 18 RDXs in stock. Find out why the 2016 Acura RDX was the number one selling luxury SUV on Vancouver Island. Test drive one today at Campus Acura in Victoria, 3347 Oak Street, online at campusacura.com.
My name is Tara, and I work for Sydney All Care Residents. People always ask me, what makes Sydney All Care different? For starters, we're all about care. We offer private rooms. We have our own on-site gourmet chef. We have 24-hour staff, and we always have fun. So what makes us different? At Sydney All Care Residents, we're all about care.
Sydney All Care Residents, privately offering respite, complex, and palliative care. Learn more at allcarecanada.ca.
Have you ever heard someone say, "That's the greatest thing since sliced bread"? Island Bakery wondered, if sliced bread is one of the best inventions of all time, then what does that mean for certified organic grain bread? Available in 100% whole wheat, 12 grain, or ancient 7 grain with quinoa and sunflower flax? If one of those fantastic breads was sliced, then would that be the best thing ever? Find out at Island Bakery, the island's local bakery since 1982.
Maintenance tips, repair advice, and more. Motorline.
Brought to you by Speedy Auto.
Saturdays at 3 on CFAX 1070. Bringing you deeper into the story. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. It is eviction day at Tent City by the Provincial Courthouse. We're talking about that right now, and the calls are stacking up. Let's get to Mike. Hi, Mike. You're on CFAX.
Hi. I'm going to be real quick. As I was saying, that you have people who have medical problems. Let's get the government to step in and look after the people with the medical problems. But the part that really aggravates me is when they keep on using that the people who have a drug addiction is a medical it is not a medical problem. It is a poor choice. And these people that are taking up time, dollars and cents, I thought that we had a country where the majority rules. The government has ruled, move. The judges have said, move. Let's do it.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. I'll hang up and listen to you.
Michael, I would take umbrage with the assertion that it's a choice with some people with drugs. What do you think?
I mean, I understand where the caller is coming from in terms of, you know, it seems like a different thing from the person who has cancer in that there's, you know, the person's doing something to themselves. And it may be fair to say in some circumstances, the initial decision when somebody starts using heroin, for example, there may have been some greater element of free choice there. But I think it's fair to say that once somebody winds up in the grips of these substances, it's not a matter of simply having enough willpower to put the heroin down.
We're also hearing emerging evidence of addiction that it's often predicated on difficult childhoods and the like, and it's a form of self-medication and not so much of a let's get high recreationally.
That's very true. It is also very often intermingled with mental illness. Many of the people who wind up on the street have a complex combination of problems. It's not just that you have you know, schizophrenia. It's that you've got schizophrenia and you've been self-medicating by using some substance, which now you're addicted to. So now you've got these sort of overlapping substance abuse, addiction, and mental illness. And that would be the most common picture.
What about Mike's assertion that, you know, the province, the people have spoken, and it's time for them to go?
Well, I should clarify, there has not been an order of the court to leave. There's been a request by the province. They've put up a letter, and that's the equivalent of the homeowner asking the person who set up a tent in their front yard, giving them a letter saying, please move along. Some of the individuals have left, but obviously not all of them. So the next step in the process would ultimately be seeking an injunction to go. And that's more than a polite request or a letter. It would be an order of the court, which you would expect people to comply with. And if you don't, it's on pain of being arrested for contempt and hauled off the land.
Some other big news, medical marijuana, federal court judge ruling you can grow it in your own backyard.
Yes, that just came out yesterday. The decision struck down the regime that had been put in place by the previous government for people who required medical marijuana to have to order that from a number of sort of approved large suppliers. That was supposed to be the shift from the previous regime, which involved licensing for people to grow medical marijuana that they required or having other people grow it for them. And the judge in this case found that that scheme, which was put in place, wasn't adequate. He concluded that its effect was to breach people's, what's called in the Charter, Section 7 rights, which is that everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of the person, and the right not to be deprived thereof except in accordance with the principles of fundamental justice. That's the language. The judge was looking at whether the effect of the rules, which meant that some people couldn't afford to purchase the amount of marijuana they needed to treat their medical condition, and therefore put them at risk of being arrested and sent to jail if they were growing their own marijuana because they couldn't afford what it was being sold for, mm-hmm. found that to be a breach. The way the judge handled that is that there had been an injunction, or there had been a stay of the there'd been a court order permitting people who had licenses to carry on with their production while this and other cases were being sorted out. That stay is being continued, so people that were licensed can continue to do that. And the judge has given the federal government 6 months to fix this. If they don't fix the problem, then at that point, I suppose that would be the end of the regulatory scheme that was put in place by the previous government. The political implication of this is going to be to provide perhaps a shorter timeline than what might have otherwise been the case for the government to deal with their underlying policy, which is to legalize this.
So this ramps up the need for the Trudeau government to legalize marijuana if they're going to?
It would certainly be an impetus to do that. I mean, we haven't yet seen how the government's going to respond to this, whether they are going to try to draft a whole new scheme of rules that would comply with this order. But it would seem to me that if you're in the process of legalizing this substance generally, I'm not sure how much time and effort you want to put into an appeal of this decision or coming up with a whole new regulatory scheme.
Is that why we see Shoppers Drug Mart and London Drugs joining the frenzy saying, we should be in the business of selling pot?
Yeah, that's fascinating. There's now that that's obviously coming, right? The government's clear that that's what's going to be happening. You see this sort of feeding frenzy of various different organizations wanting to be the ones who are doing the distribution, be it the government liquor store, union employees union, or PharmaSave, or London Drugs, or whoever it might be, all wanting to get in on that. And it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. I mean, if you look back at history in terms of alcohol prohibition and how that ended, I mean, at one point people were, you know, making gin in their bathtub and pouring it into bottles and selling it, you know, you'd have some bootlegger selling it. And now we've moved to, you know, a scheme whereby that just never is going to play in the marketplace. So, you know, there's not a great market for bathtub gin these days when you can show up at the local liquor store and get something much more satisfactory. So no doubt, as this gets sorted out, I would expect we'll get a trend towards that sort of more normalized process where you don't have, you know, stuffs in bags of unknown quality. You would hope that this gets organized and, you know, properly labeled and sorted out, and that's how most things get sold.
Robert Picton, trying to sell a book, Serial Killer. You've got some new information. We've got just under 3 minutes here.
Yeah, that's interesting. That when it came out that he'd published this book, that at least for some short period of time was listed on Amazon, there was much debate, including around whether a person who's convicted of a crime should be able to profit by writing a book about it. Now, the new information that came out yesterday was in an interview of the person who managed to get the manuscript out of the prison. It was another prisoner who managed to get this thing out. And what that person indicated is that Picton, in fact, signed over all of the rights to the book to him in exchange for this person getting the manuscript out. And he reports that Picton told him he wants no money for the book. He just wants his story to be told. And that's interesting because it's a completely different perspective than how the matter has been framed. There's no longer appears to be, if all that is true, an issue about whether Mr. Picton should be able to profit from this crimes that he was convicted of. It is now a much sort of purer analysis of whether he should be allowed to write a book for which he would receive no money. Of course, we have other examples of that. I don't think Robert Picton appears to be any Stephen Reed, the description of the books that I've read. But Mr. Reed is an example of an author who's written about things involving criminal activity that he was convicted of, Jackrabbit Parole and others, and apparently very, very well. My take on it is, leaving aside that issue of whether this somebody should be able to profit from writing something or whether that might be the proceeds of crime or something of that sort, it seems to me if a person wants to write something like that and receive no payment for it, our response, if we don't like it, is don't buy a copy of it.
So Amazon didn't need to pull it.
Well, they did pull it, I think, just as a result of public pressure. But, as it turns out, no money was going to go to Mr. Picton anyways. The issue really is, are we going to allow somebody who's convicted to write about something for free, which is, I think, perhaps a different inquiry than or a different analysis that might apply if you thought somebody was profiting from having committed a notorious crime. It seems to me we're got to be pretty slow to restrict somebody from wanting to express their opinion for free. If he wishes to do that, I think a fair response by many people would say, well, that's fine. I'm not too terribly interested in reading it, but I don't see why we would need to ban somebody from doing what he appears to have done here.
It put the families through a lot.
Fair enough. Their response to it is to ignore it, right? If you don't like the book, don't buy the book. That's how we ordinarily respond to things, which may, there are all sorts of distasteful things in the world. No doubt this is in that category, and we don't need to necessarily ban them. We can just ignore them.
We sure covered a lot. Thanks so much. And if you're at the courthouse and you see things being broken down, you give us a call and we'll put you on the air again.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Been talking to, of course, Michael Mulligan of